We're holding on Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Hiniach Banim G'dayla Muktanim. A person passed away and he left older and younger sons. Hishbichu G'dayla Masanachasim. Now, if those older sons go and improve the property while it's still before they divided it up, Hishbichu La'emsa, then all of the shvach, all of the improvement that they made goes to the middle, meaning, in other words, it goes to the common pool, and later on, when they split up the inheritance, then each of them is going to get his proportional part of it. So if, let's say, the Nechasim were worth 100 when they inherited it, and they haven't yet split it up, and now by the time the older children have gone and improved it, and now it's worth 120, and let's say there are four of them, again, let's say there are four portions that it's going to be split into, because let's say there are three children, so you have the Bechor, and then you have two others, so each one of them is going to end up getting 30 for his portion, and the Bechor will get 60, we're not going to say that because the older ones did the improvement, they should be entitled to all that improvement themselves. No, it all goes equally to all of them. Tosfos points out the same thing would really apply even if they were all older. But usually when all of them are older, then all of them are capable of doing this together. And usually they would do that. Only typically you would have when some of them are older and some of them are younger, then you would have the older ones do it. But im omru, if the older ones say, and they say that Ashbam says in front of Edim or in front of Beistin, or they say generally in the Tzibur, so if they say, Ru'uma shiniach abba, look, this is what our father left us as our inheritance, hare onu oisin va'oichlin, then we're going to work and improve it, and we're going to, in other words, Rashbam says, they're saying, we're all ready to divide it up. So at this point, whatever improvements we're going to make are going to be specifically to our portion. So then that's fine. Hishbichu la'atzman, then the shvach goes to them themselves, because they made that declaration. Tosfos discusses and says that it may not mean that here that Rashbam is saying, it's talking about that where they haven't divided it up yet, but they're saying that we're all ready to divide it, and the part that we're going to get, the improvement that we're going to get, is going to be from the part that we're going to mainly be working on our part, and we're going to be getting the shvach of our part. In other words, we're saying that whatever the shvach that we're working on is not on the entire thing, just on our part. Tosfos disagrees with that on various grounds, including the story that the Gemara is going to tell in this connection involving the Gemara is going to tell on the next Amud involving Rav Safra and his brother. Is a story over there. Where Rav Safra was the older brother and he had younger brothers, etc. Anyway, so Tosfos explains that, no, what it means is that all the shvach, those older brothers are going to be entitled to because they're doing the work and they're declaring that they plan to keep it, and the other brothers are moichel to them, because look, they're younger brothers and they don't know how to be mashviach, how to improve the property, and therefore they leave it up to their older brothers, and given that the older brothers made such an announcement, then therefore they're willing to be moichel to them. Tosfos also discusses that it doesn't necessarily, why does it have to be specifically in front of Beis Din? Here that Rashbam had said it can be in front of Beis Din or Edim or just in the Tzibur. Tosfos brings from the Tesefta that says it specifically has to be in front of Beis Din, but then Tosfos wonders why. Maybe there is a valid reason why it has to be done in front of Beis Din. Tosfos gives a couple of possibilities, but maybe it just means maybe in fact Tosfos says we can still accept maybe what the Rashbam says, that it's enough to do it in front of Edim, etc. In fact, the Ritva also points out that the Ritva also points out that Yesh Mefoshim, which would be Tosfos and others, for example, that say that yes, that it's not specifically a Beis Din, it just means that it has to be publicized. Continues the Mishnah. V'chein ha'isha sheish b'chas anachasim, the same way a woman whose husband died and she says, she's improving the property. Now, usually when her husband dies and she's just getting mezonos, she doesn't actually own the property. She's just entitled to mezonos until she collects her ksuba. So there's not really any property that we can be talking about that would be going la'emsa to the common pool, etc. So the Gemara is going to explain, we're talking about where she's yashining And we're going to discuss, when we learn that in the Gemara, we'll discuss the various possibilities that the Rishonim say, how it could be that she's Yarshining, given that ordinarily, as we learned in the previous parak, a wife doesn't usually Yarshin from her husband. Anyway, so we'll see about the details of that, but meanwhile, the Mishnah says that this woman, she improved the Nechasim, so any improvements that she made also go to the common pool, and it gets eventually divided up among the Yoshim. On the other hand, Im Omra, but if she says, now the Rashbam later on explains that this last case is a different case, namely where she's not one of the Yoshim, we'll see later what Tosfos has to say about that. Anyway, if she says, Ru'uma shiniach li bayri, look and see, this is what my husband left me. Hare ani oisa v'echelas, I'm planning to get involved in taking care of the Yerusha and improve it, v'echelas, and eat and consume the shvach that I got, hishbich la'atzma, then the shvach goes to her and she doesn't divide it with the other ones. That would be provided that she's not getting mizonis, that Rashbam explains. If she's getting mizonis, then all her maisi adeha, all of her earnings go to her, just like her husband, when he was alive, gave her mizonis and her maisi adeha go to him, so it would be with the Yisroelim also. So here we have to be talking about, she's not receiving mizonis from them, and we're talking about then she's saying, so now she's earning money by investing and managing the property, and therefore those improvements go specifically to her. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chaviva Breder of Yosef Breder Rava, Mishmei de Rava, Rav Chaviva then is it, so he's the grandson of Rava, he's the son of Rav Yosef, who's the son of Rava. So now this grandson, Rav Chaviva, is saying in the name of his Zayde Rava. When we say that if the older children improve the property, we said hishbichu la'emsa, then the improvements go to the common pool. By the way, Tosfos mentions in this connection, before we get to that actually, the Mishnah had mentioned you have a case where the older children improve the property and hishbichu la'atzman, they're entitled to that improvement for themselves. Now you have actually a case in Hamafkid, so some of us may remember it from when we learned it in Cheder. When we learned it in sixth or seventh or whatever grade, that there was a case over there involving a rich Yid by the name of Mori Bar Isaac, where one day a guy came to him and said, I'm your brother. Your father many years ago had gone to a faraway place, Beit Chazoi, and he brought me with him. And now many years later, he comes back, and to make a long story short, at first Mori Bar Isaac didn't recognize him. Eventually the guy brought proof that he is in fact his brother. So there actually we said, that at first we were going to say that so at one point this brother says, you know, there's also Mori Bar Isaac has planted gardens and orchards and things, I should be entitled to my share of that. And the Gemara went back and forth about whether in fact he should be entitled, and the conclusion was that since this brother was a cotton at the time and he couldn't be Moichel, then therefore yes, Mori Bar Isaac has to give him part of all of that as well. He can't say Shbichol Atzman. Why is it we're saying over here Shbichol Atzman? Tosfos points out because here we're talking about all of them are together, so therefore we can say, like we said, that the younger brothers are moichel to the older brothers, as opposed to in that case, that brother was far away in Beit Chazoi, a place some distance from Bavel, and therefore he didn't know what his brother was doing, and we can't say that he was moichel. Okay, so anyway, so the Gemara, Amar Rav Chaviva Breder of Yosef Breder Rava, Mishmei de Rava, Lo Yishonu Ela Sheshavchu Nechosim Machmas Nechosim. When we're saying that if the older brothers made improvements to the property and caused the value of it now to go up, that shvach goes to the common pool, meaning that eventually when they divide up the estate, all of them get an equal portion of it, that would only be where the nechosim improved because of the nechosim, meaning, in other words, that the older brothers, for example, they didn't spend money of their own. They took money out of the nechosim and went and hired workers for the purpose of improving it. But if they themselves put in their own, invested their own money into it, they hired workers out of their own pocket, for example, so then, says Rav Chaviva, the shvach goes to them themselves, because they're the ones who invested that money. So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? Even if their father had left them, what if he hadn't left them actual fields? What if he only left them an udyoni? Now, the Rashbam explains that an udyoni would be a water pit with a cover. So people rent it out in order. People will use it to water their fields. Tosfos discusses and then says that no, an udiyani is a keli that people would use. They could use it to hold things in it, but you could also primarily you would use it to stand on, or it could also be used to lie on. So Tosfos also brings the word udiyani can be related to a word in Aramaic davi, which means to look around, because it's a tall keli, sort of like a step ladder or something that you could use to stand on, for example, when you're watching a field or a vineyard or whatever, to make sure that nobody is breaking in, then you would stand on an udiyani. And there's also a gemara in Moed Katan that implies that it's possible to sleep on it. So it would be sort of like a wide step ladder or scaffold or something like that. In any case, that's what Tosfos says an udiyani is. Be that as it may, the point is that it's the kind of thing you rent out typically to people. So haschar la'emsa, so Chanina says that the rental fees for it gets divided up among all the brothers. Now v'ho udiyani demachmas atzmahu. Now in udiyani, the older brothers are not investing anything into it. We're talking about all they're doing is they're taking this udiyani that they inherited and they're renting it out, whether it means a pit or whether it means a step ladder or whatever. The point is that it's machmas atzman, and still we're saying haschar, and still we're saying that has chayla emsa, as opposed to the other way around. Machmas atzmahu, because the older brothers, it's actually the older brothers do need to put effort into it, because they need to watch it. They make sure if an udiyani means, like the Rashbam says, a water pit, they need to watch it and make sure that nobody is coming and taking water when they're not supposed to. If you say like a benetam, then it means like a tall keli or something also. You need to watch it and make sure nobody makes off with it. And so then it's machmas atzma, because the older brothers are the ones who are guarding it and watching it and making sure that it stays intact. And we're saying that the schala emsa. So it doesn't make a difference apparently whether the older brothers themselves put an effort or not. The answer is shiny udiyani dilanatiruso udavida. Fine, but after all, an udiyani, they still don't have to spend money on it. All they need to do is you just need to watch it. Even the younger children are able to watch it. So therefore, you can't say, when you're talking about, for example, a field where you have to hire workers to work it, and you might have the younger children don't know what to do with that, so the older brothers do it, then we can distinguish between whether they spent their own money on it or whether they took money out of the estate and use it for that purpose. But here, when you're talking about an udiyani, always it's going to be that a schar la'emtza, the rental fees, are going to be split evenly among all of them, because even the younger children could watch it and make sure that nobody is coming and taking water or doing whatever with it. So that would be the difference. Again, Tosfos also, in this connection, also brings up that story of Mori by Isaac over there, where, after all, he had planted orchards, and he had put in effort over there, and his brother tells him that I should be entitled to a share of it. So Tosfos discusses that they are the same idea. In other words, we don't mean the Mori bar Isaac took money out of the Yerusha and used it to plant those to have those orchards planted and managed or whatever. And therefore, the brother is saying, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, that he's entitled to a share of it. Continues the Gemara, so now the Mishnah had said Omru, so now if the older brothers had said Ru'u mashihiniach Abba, look and see, this is what our father left us. We plan to work and to manage and to use it ourselves and to enjoy the shvach ourselves, the shvichu la'atzman. Then we said the shvach goes to them themselves. So the Gemara is going to bring a case in this connection. Rab Safra shavak avuhi zuzi. Rab Safra's father had left money as a Yerusha. Shaklinu, now Rab Safra, who was an older brother, took that money. Ovid Bahu Iska, and he opened a business with it to earn money with the business. Also Achi Tavu Bedina Kameda Rava. So his brothers took him to a din Torah in front of Rava to argue that they should be getting their share of it. Now, Rav Safra had not explicitly said that he, Rav Safra had not explicitly said that he plans to work for himself. So therefore, so they're arguing in that case, then he's entitled to, they're entitled to a share of it. So Rava says you have to consider this is a special case. Rav Safra Gavra Rabahu. Rav Safra is a great person, a Talmid Chacham. Loi Shavik Girsei the Torah Lachrini. We can assume he wouldn't be abandoning his learning in order to work on behalf of others. So even though he hasn't explicitly said that he plans to earn from this money for himself, it would still mean that he's only planning that he's only earning for the sake of earning money for himself. So he has the opportunity to learn without being disturbed with Parnassa, not that he's doing it on behalf of his brothers. So even though he didn't say so explicitly, because he's a Gavra Rabba, because he's a great person, then therefore that would apply. Now, that's Tosfos had discussed before that bears on the question of that Rashbam had explained that when the older brothers say Ru'u Ma'u Mashiniach Lanu Abba Harein Oisin Va'Ochlin, we plan to just earn money ourselves and it's going to be just for ourselves. But in this story of Rav Safra, it sounds like he wanted all of the proceeds from it, and that's what his brothers are claiming from him. So that's why Tosfos had explained before, the Rivam had explained that in fact in the Mishnah as well, the older brothers are saying we're saying that because we're putting in the effort, and as the Gemara had said, Ishpichu Machmas Atzman, they're putting in the effort, they're investing their own money or their own time or whatever, so therefore they can keep it for themselves. So that would be the case of a hero. Rav Safra is claiming that he should be able to keep all of the proceeds for himself. The poskim do say, by the way, that nowadays we don't necessarily have Talmid Chachamim of this caliber to be able to say that when it's not specified. So first of all, Rabbeinu Yonah actually does explain more like the Rashbam, that he wasn't trying to take all of the proceeds, just his portion, and then the rest of it he was going to be like a pikadon. But in any case, the Nemuka Yosef for Radio Rishon points out that nowadays we don't have Talmid Chachamim of such caliber that we can say like Rav Safra, that we would say that necessarily he's doing it only for himself and not doing it for others, and therefore we would say that unless he states so explicitly, then it's assumed that all of his brothers are going to share in it. Okay. The Mishnah said, if a woman in a similar vein says that if she improves the nechasim, then the improvements go into the common pool and the yoshim all get it together. The question is, isha benichse yasmi ma yavinta? What is she exactly doing with the nechasim of the yisraimim? One or the other. Either she's going to collect her ksuba and that's that, or the Yisraelim are going to be giving her mizonis, and she's going to get it, and she's going to be giving them her maisi yadeha. Where she's investing and managing their money, where she should be saying whatever improvements I'm going to make, I can say that they're going to go specifically to me, and if not, then they go to the common pool. Where does she have a share in those improvements anyway? So the Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah b'isha yereshes. The answer is we're talking about a woman who yaushins. Now, ordinarily, a woman doesn't yaushin from her husband. So the Rashbam gives a few possibilities. One would be, for example, that you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven married Shimon's daughter, Shimon dies, therefore his daughter is yaushining in his place. Yaakov dies, Reuven and Shimon, all of them die. So now you have Reuven's children and Shimon's daughter are all yaushining from Yaakov, because Reuven himself is dead and therefore his sons yaushin from him. Shimon has only a daughter, or only daughters, plural, whatever, and therefore they yaushin from Shimon and in turn from Yaakov. So that would be one example how then it could be that Reuven's wife is yaushening together with is yaushening property together with Reuven's sons. Another possibility would be that she's not the only daughter. It could be that she's it could be that she's one of several daughters. You could have, for example, also where you could have again also where she's a daughter of one of the sons, which would again, for example, she'd be Shimon's son or Shimon's daughter or Shimon's granddaughter or what have you. Another possibility that Ashbam says is where the husband said to begin with, as we've learned before, Kitel ishti ke'echad min abanim, my wife should get a portion equal to one of my children. We learned before, and we're going to learn again at the bottom of this Amud, that if he says all the nechasim go to her, then it's not giving her anything. It's just making her an apotropa. It's just making her a caretaker of the estate. But if he gives her a portion, as we learned the other day, then fine, she gets a portion equal to one of the children. So then that could be another case where she's yarshining as if she was one of the children. So Tosfos has a problem with a number of these explanations, because how can you say, for example, where it's talking about that she's Shimon's daughter and therefore she's yarshining from Yaakov, because she's saying Ru'u mashiniach li bayli, look what my husband left me. Now, according to the Rashbam scenario over there, she's not yarshining from her husband, she's yarshining from her grandfather Yaakov. So Tosfos brings from the Rivam another scenario. We are in fact talking to begin with where Reuven married his brother Shimon's daughter, so his niece, but then you're talking about that Reuven also had other younger brothers or their children, so they're the Yisoimim, and then she's collecting, and then she's yarshining together with the Yisoimim in place of her father, and then Tosfos points out, listen, since her husband, after all, true, she's yarshining from her grandfather, Yaakov, in either of these cases, but nevertheless, she's also, the fact is her husband was entitled to eat peiros from it throughout their marriage, so it can still be called hiniach li bayli. Then again, Tosfos says you could also have what the Rashbam had said that you're talking about, where her husband had said to begin with that she should be entitled to a share of the nechasim like all the other children. Then the Agoy Sabach brings from the Rif another scenario you can have, let's say. So again, Reuven marries his niece, Shimon's daughter, but then Shimon dies and leaves daughters. Meanwhile, Reuven himself doesn't have any children. So Reuven's wife, which is Shimon's daughter, is going to yarshin from her husband together with her sisters who are Shimon's daughters. So now everything works out, because you can say that her husband left it, because after all, Shimon is yarshining from his brother Reuven, and in turn, she as his daughter is yarshining from him. And you can also use the word Yisoimim, because she's one of the Yisoimim. She's one of the daughters whom Shimon left when he passed away. So that would be another scenario where she's an Isha Yerushas. So the point is, you have a number of cases. Where a woman can be yarshining, and that would be what the Mishnah is talking about. Therefore, so she's saying, so now she owns. So when the estate is divided up, she's going to be entitled to a share of it. Meanwhile, the same thing, like in the case with the older brothers earlier in the Mishnah. She's saying that I'm, so first, if she doesn't say anything, then any improvements she makes go to the common pool, and they all share in it. So they all share it equally. But if she says, Umashiniachli Baili, I plan to work it and earn by myself, then she keeps it for herself, and then you have the Rashbam versus Tosfos, whether it means that she's keeping, or the Rashbam versus the Rivam, actually, they were brothers, the Rivam was a brother of the Rashbam. Anyway, whether it means that she's getting all of it, as the Rivam says, or whether it means that she's just getting from the improvements within her share, as the Rashbam says. So that would be the case. Be'isha Yereshes. So they want to ask Pshita. Well, in that case, it's obvious that in that case, why should she be any different than the case of the older brothers? The answer is Ma'ur Detema, Kivin Delav Dauka L'Mitrach. Because after all, it's not usual for a woman to be involved in managing the Nechasim. So you could argue, Afagav Delay Potash. So even if she didn't specify and say, Ru'u Mashiniach Li Baili, Kamoy De Potash Dami, we should consider it as though she had actually specified, like in the case of Reb Safra, where even though he hadn't said so explicitly, but implicitly we say, because he's a Talmud Chacham, we can assume he wouldn't be spending his valuable time working for others. And therefore we can assume he's keeping it for himself. So you would think with a woman, it's the same kind of thing. It's not normal for her to do that. Kamash Malan, therefore the Mishnah is telling us that no, a Talmud Chacham like Reb Safra is one thing, but a woman would be the same as a man in that regard. And the same rules apply. If she doesn't specify, then it goes to all of them. And if she does specify, then she keeps it. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, "V'im amra ru'u mashiniach li baili." If she says that, if she says, "Look at what, look, this is what my husband left me," harini oisava echelas, I'm going to be eating, I'm going to be working on it, and I'm going to be consuming the improvements, the shvach. Then, so then we said, so then he said, hishvich ala atzma. So then the shvach goes to her. Then the shvach goes to her herself. So again, the question is pshita. Isn't that obvious? If she says that, then it should be no different than the brothers. And in fact, so now the Rashbam explains that this case over here is actually a separate case, is actually not talking about anymore an isha yodeshes, where she yarshins together, where she yarshins part of the estate. Here the Rashbam says, this is a separate case. A regular almana says, here's the nechotim that my husband left me. I'm going to be working on it, and I'm going to be consuming the proceeds. Then he shvicha la'atzma. So then the Rashbam says again, we have to be talking about where she's not, as he said in the Mishnah, and as he says again over here, has to be talking about she's not getting mizonis, otherwise she gives them her ma'isi adeha. So in other words, the case would be that Ashbam says her husband died, he left over not enough money to pay off the ksuba. So if she says, here, this is what my husband left me, and Beis Din didn't now what's supposed to be is at some point Beis Din is supposed to make her swear that she didn't already collect her ksuba. And then she'll be entitled to mazonis, that she'll be entitled to her ksuba, and even if her husband didn't leave her enough of a yerusha to collect the ksuba, enough of an estate to collect the ksuba, then she's gonna go after people who previously bought property, as you have the whole regular thing of a shivud. So here, now what it is, let's say Beis Din didn't get around to making her swear that, or the Yoshin didn't get around to taking her to Beis Din to that. So then, any improvements that she makes, yishbicha la'atzma, then she gets to keep it. Otherwise, we would say that she just collects the amount of her ksuba, and the Yoshin take the rest. So now the question is it pshita? Isn't this obvious? And the answer is Mao de Tema. Mao de Tema. Given the Shvicha La Milsa. You could argue that it's a shvach for her, the Amri, that people are going to say, Kaptarcha Kami Yasmi, she'll look how much work she's doing on behalf of the Yisomim. People don't realize that she's doing it for herself. Achuli Achla, maybe she's willing to be moichel on the shvach and give some of it to them because of this praise that they give her. Kamash Moan, no, she had said that she's keeping the shvach for herself, so therefore she's not moichel. So now the Rashbam points out that we're talking about once she said he's niach li baili, then again she's not getting mizonis anymore, because otherwise if she gets mizonis, then she's giving them her ma'isi yadeha. Tosfos discusses, and not necessarily, there could actually be cases where she's not, where there could actually be cases where she's still getting mizonis anyway, even if she forfeited part of her ksuba. In any case, Tosfos says anyway that Tosfos also learns that we still are talking about an Isha Yereshes. The Rashbam is saying over here that we have two separate cases, one talking about where she's Yarshining, and the other one where she says Ru'u Mashiniach Li Baili is going to be talking about where she's not Yarshining, and the Rashbam explains these are two different cases. Tosfos explains that they're actually talking about the same case, an Isha Yereshes. And that also, that goes with here, that Ashbam had explained several scenarios, how it could be she was yarshining, and Tosfos had wondered, yeah, but in many of those cases, she's not yarshining from her husband, how can she say he niachli baili, and therefore Tosfos had presented other possible scenarios. According to the Ashbam, the answer is very simple. The Ashbam understands that there are two separate cases. One is talking about where she's improving the property and all of them keep it, and the other, the case where she's keeping it for herself, is not where she yarshin from her husband, but just what we're talking about, as the Rashbam said, that her husband left behind not enough of a large estate to pay her ksuba, and therefore she's working it in order to improve it, in order to collect more money that eventually she can get her ksuba from. And eventually they were saying that if she keeps it for herself, then she gets all of the improvements, even if it comes out to much more than the original value of her ksuba. The Gemara says, So now the Gemara is going to bring a din, which we're going to a seemingly unrelated din, but we're going to relate it back to this matter of a man's wife yarshining from him. The Gemara says, Omer Rav Chanina, Hamasi Isha Lebnoi Gadol Babayis, when a person marries off his son in a particular house, Pnoi, then the son acquires that house, and that becomes the place that he, that becomes the place. In other words, in effect, we assume that the father is giving him that house as a present where he's going to live in, where he's going to live in after his wedding. The Gemara is going to call it further on a takanas chachamim hilchsa b'loy timer. It's almost like a halacha that doesn't seem to have a logical basis behind it. Rashbam also points out, the Gemara elsewhere in Gittin explains that we're talking about where the husband and where the father himself has a different place to live. So the father himself has a different house. We're not talking about that now. The father is going to have to move out and be homeless. We're talking about the father has another house, and now he reserved this house for his son to get married in under the conditions that the Gemara is going to say now. Then it means that he's giving that house to his son as a wedding present, because of the simcha that he's marrying off his son. So therefore he's willing to do that. So the Gemara points out, first of all, the Davka Gadol, it would only be if only his eldest son, because then he has the greatest simcha. Now the Rosh points out, it would Davka be his eldest son. Now he may have older daughters, but at least the fact that he's marrying off his first son is a great simcha for him, and therefore he would be doing this. And I guess the point is, when his daughters are getting married, their husbands are supposed to provide for them, so therefore let their husbands provide them a house to live. Anyway, so Davka, when it's his oldest son, but Davka Besula, Davka, when the son is marrying a Besula, then there's a greater simcha. The Davka Ishter Rishona, Davka also when this son is marrying his first wife, so not if he himself had been married before and widowed or divorced. The Davka, he's Siyo Rishon, and also when the father is marrying him off first among all his sons. So in other words, not only that he's the oldest son, but he's also the first son to get married, then with all of those factors, that it's his oldest son, and it's his first son getting married, and it's his first marriage, and it's Rabbi Sula, then with all of that, we're saying that his father is giving him the house that he got married in as a present. So the Gemara says, let's work out some details with that. Pshita yichud le'bayis v'aliyah. It's obvious that if the father had designated for the wedding a house which also has a second floor on top of it, bayis kona aliyah le'kona, then we would assume he's only getting the house and not the aliyah, not the second floor, because the second floor has a certain chashivos of its own, and therefore it's not part of the house for that purpose. In a similar vein, way back in the fourth parak, we talked about when you sell a house, you're not automatically selling the second floor on top of it. So in the same way over here, when he's giving him the house as a present, it's not necessarily including the second floor. What about? The question would be, though, bayis v'achsadra mahu. What about what would be the din, though, if the house has an achsadra, an entryway before it, which is, so you walk through the achsadra to get to the house, and it has a lot of windows in it, so it's like an open foyer. The point being, in other words, that Ashbam says, the Tosfos says, it's one thing you could say a second floor is not koina, because a second floor is used as a living space of its own. But an achsadra maybe is more connected to the house. But on the other hand, you could say that maybe not, maybe it's still considered a metzius of its own. What about, also you could ask, shnei batim zelifnim mizeh mahu? What about if there were two houses, one further in than the other? In Kim Tzaloyma, the Rashbam says, you could argue with a house and an achsadra, maybe he's coining both of them, because the achsadra is secondary to the house. The achsadra is an entryway into the house. But maybe a one house, one room further back than the other, meaning you have to walk through the outer one to get to the inner one. Maybe that's not reason enough to make one of them meshubad to the other. The Tosfos rather explains differently, another way of looking at it. Now, according to the Rashbam, the vort is an achsadra, is more secondary to the house, whereas the more meshubad to the house, whereas two houses or two rooms, one further back than the other, is not necessarily. Tosfos says actually what it is that you could say an achsadra, you don't actually use specifically as a house. You can't really live there because it's too open. But you could say two houses, one within the other, maybe one further back than the other, maybe they could be considered like one house because both of them are places that you live in. In any case, so the answer is teku. So in those two cases, it's teku, and therefore the son is not acquiring the asadra or the inner room because I'm moitzi mechabel avarayim. So the Gemara says meisvi. Now I have a general question though on Rav Chanina's din that was saying that he's giving this house to his son as a place to live. A Braisa says, Yichud le Ovid Bayis or Clay Bayis, if his father set aside for him a house to have the wedding in and furniture in it, Clay Bayis Kona, The son is koina the furniture by Isleikana, but he's not acquiring the house. So what are you telling me, Rav Hanina, that he does get the house? The answer is Amar Rav Yumiya Kagan Shaya Otsir Shel Aviv Munach Shom. The answer is Rav Yumiya says that we're talking about where the father has things stored in the house. So therefore, since the father is still using the house, then it means he didn't want to be makna the house to his son. So, a vaguely similar din, actually, you have in connection with Hilchos Eruvin, that you have, if you have a goyish neighbor in the chotzer or the apartment building or whatever, then in order to make an Eruv there, you need schiras reshus, you need to rent, at least symbolically, the goy's property in order to make it that now you can make an Eruv, but you have a din. If you have something in the goy's house that, where he's given you permission previously to store something there, or let's say you're the landlord or a Jew, and you have something in that house that remains there that belongs to you and doesn't belong to the tenant, then that's already considered that you live there. So in the same vein over here, when the father is storing something in the house, means he's retaining a certain ownership of the house, and therefore the son doesn't acquire it. Whereas Rav Hanina is talking about where the father does not have anything stored there. So the Gemara says it doesn't have to be a huge amount of stuff stored. Nahadoi Ami, the Chachamim of Nahadoi said, Afilu Shoiv Chadiyoni, even if the father only has in the house a birdhouse, then that would be enough to prevent the son from being koyin of the house. Because even though you could argue a birdhouse is not really something that you normally have in a house, and it's something that you could easily take out, nevertheless, we would still say that it shows that he's not meaning to give away the house. Similarly, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Papi, Amri, Afilu Atzitza Deharsina. Even if the father only has in the house a keli full of fried fish, Chakosa Deharsina is something that's mentioned throughout Shas. It's a type of fish dish that they had in those days. It was fish fried in their own fat together with some flour. I guess it was kind of the equivalent of breaded fish or gefilte fish or something. In any case, even if he has only a keli of that in the house, then also it demonstrates that he wants to retain a certain ownership of the house, and therefore the son is not koine. So in that connection, the Gemara tells, Mazutra married off his son in a house, and since he didn't want that the son should be able to claim the house for himself, Tolalei Sandala, he hung a sandal over there. So that way, it's still his house, he still has a keli in there. Rab Ashi Nasle Libre, similarly, Rab Ashi married off his son, the Tolalei Ashisha de Mishcha, and he hung over there a keli full of oil. Same idea. These were things that are not being used for the wedding, and therefore it showed that he wants to retain ownership of the house. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Amar Mazutra, Hani Tlas Mili Shavinu Rabbanan Kehilchus Abalei Taima. There were three halachas that the Chachamim said where they made them almost like a halacha l'Moshe Mishinai without a reason. When we have something that's halacha l'Moshe Mishinai, then we know that's how it is. You're going to ask what's the logic behind it, whatever. What do you mean? It's logic. The Eibishter said so. That's how it is. Mazutra is saying that there were three dinim where the Chachamim made a takana, and they made it kind of like that also. There might not be such a logical reason behind it, but nevertheless, that's the way it is. Chodaha, one is our din that we said. Now, Tosfos points out, it's not completely blood time. It's not like it's completely not understandable. We can understand, since he emptied out the house of all his kalin, because we said if he leaves any kalin in there, then the whole din doesn't work. He emptied it out completely. Then the son has a certain smichus das. So first of all, the father emptied out the house completely. Second of all, the son is not going to have any place to live otherwise. So therefore, we can say there's a certain smichus das. There's a certain mental certainty that he has that his father is going to give it to him. Nevertheless, you could say there is a logical reason behind it why the Chachamim would make a takana, but still, I mean, you could argue logically, is that a reason that the father should give away a whole house to his son and the son has absolute right to claim it? So it's like Hilchos Ablai time. Idach, another one, the Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, what we learned in the previous perek that Rabbi Yehuda had said in the name of Shmuel, HaKosev kol nechasev le'ishtoi la'asor el apaturpa, that when a man writes out a document giving all his nechasim to his wife, that he's making her only an apoturupa, only a caretaker of the estate. So on the one hand, you could say, of course, there's a logical reason behind it. We can assume he doesn't mean to disinherit his children. He just means that they should honor her. Nevertheless, though, it's still sublai taima. In a sense, it's a little hard to say a tam for it, that we should take an explicit thing that he said in the shtar, I am giving my nechasim to my wife, and reinterpret it to mean that he's only making her an apoturupa. So that's another example of hilch sublai taima. And the third one, idach, the third one would be, d'amar rav, monali b'yodcha, suppose that Reuven says to Shimon, you, the money that you owe me, for example, because I was mafkid money by you, t'nehu l'ploini, instead of returning it to me, give it to Ploini, give it to Levi, b'maimad shloshtan, as long as all three of them are standing over there, Reuven, the original owner, Shimon, the shomer, and Levi, the one he wants to give it to you, so as long as that he wants to give it to you, as long as all three of them are standing over there, kona, then he's koina. Now again, there's a logical reason behind it. The logical reason is because it's a common thing that you want to transfer something that you owe to somebody else, and the Chacham didn't want to be, the Chacham wanted to make it easier to make it work easier, and therefore the Chacham made this takana. But nevertheless, it's kind of like a hilch sablai taima, like why should the fact that all three of them are standing over there make it binding, and now he can't change his mind, etc. And even to the extent, and the Tosfos even says that now, for example, if Reuven were to sell the shtar to Shimon, or to Levi, let's say, to continue our example, if there were a shtar that Shimon owes Levi money, and Reuven were to go and sell that shtar to Levi, the halacha would be that Reuven later on could be moichel that shtar. The Gemara discusses this in a number of places. And there's discussion in the Gemara and in Rishonim what the mechanism behind that is, but that's the way it is. But on the other hand, Tosfos says over here, Maimad Shloshtan is stronger than that. Once Maimad Shloshtan is done, and the money has been transferred through Maimad Shloshtan from Reuven's ownership to Levi, then Reuven would not have the ability to be moichel that debt or that amount, and therefore prevent Levi from getting it. So therefore, it's really like a hilch sablai taima. It's like a halacha without a solid reason behind it. Because why should it be any stronger than selling a shtar? And nevertheless, that's how it is. So the reason we brought this in is because the Mishnah had mentioned a case where a woman yarshins. So we're mentioning, by the way, you should realize it was just a matter of the husband wrote out a document saying that she yarshins, that wouldn't work as long as it was all the nechassim. If it was part of the nechassim, then yeah, it would work, and that would be one of the possibilities. As the Rashbam said, that would be one of the possibilities of the Isha Yereshes of our Mishnah. Mishnah says, Achin Hashutfin, when you have brothers who are partners, meaning again, where they haven't divided up the Yerusha yet, although the Rosh has a Girsa Achin V'Hashutfin, so according to the Rosh, it would apply either way, whether they're brothers or whether they're partners. Anyway, Shenafal Echad Mehen La'umnus, one of them was chosen for a job, for a job, which as the Gemara is going to say, means a job for the king. So for example, he's going to be a tax collector. And typically, the Rashbam says that would be how it would be, that the father had, for example, done this job, and now that the father died, so now the king appoints somebody from the same family to continue and take over the job. So therefore, he's only getting it because of his father. The Rambam phrases it a little differently, like the king wants to do a favor for the father. The father had served him so loyally over the years, so therefore, like, he's going to do him a favor and appoint his son to take over the job. Whatever the case, the point is, nafal emsa, the amount that he earns from that goes to the common pool. Because again, whatever expenses he did towards this job are going to be, he took money out of the estate, so it goes back to the estate, the improvements. And there's also the point, that's what Rashbam says, and then there's also the point that because his father had the job, and therefore now his father chose him, so it means the king rather had chosen him, it's not on his own merit so much, it's more as a continuation of his father, and therefore all the brothers share in that. Which we'll see in the Gemara, there's a little detail about that. What happens if one of the brothers becomes sick and he needs money for medicines and doctors or whatever? Then he has to pay it out of his own pocket. Then he doesn't get, as the Gemara is going to explain, we're talking about where he was pesheya, where he was careless and became sick. So therefore, he has to pay out of his own pocket. He can't say I'm entitled to take out of the estate to pay for my for my medical expenses. By the way, before we continue over here, an interesting point over here about the Tosfos on the rest of the Masechta, at the bottom of the previous Amud, at the bottom of Amud Aleph, there's a little note in Tosfos, Ad kan shitas harozal. Up until this point are the Tosfos from the Ra. The Ra is Rabbi Eliezer, Mituch, who was one of the later Balei Tosfos who collected a lot of the Tosfos that we have nowadays. So up until this point, it comes from his collection. And then from Omer Beis until the end of the Masechta is a different Baal Tosfos that collected it. Sometimes in general, we have a rule that Tosfos on different Masechtas come from different Balei Tosfos and from different yeshivas of the Balei Tosfos. Most of the time, researchers have been able to identify fairly accurately which one is which. But one point of that is that in Kolei HaPoskim, in rules that you have from the Poskim, how to Paskin Halacha, there's a general rule, you usually can't ask from Tosfos in one Masechta on Tosfos in a different one that they seem to contradict, because Tosfos in different Masechtas were composed and then collected by different Balei Tosfos, and therefore they may represent different opinions. So if you have, of course, in one Tosfos it says Rabbi Natam said this, and a different one says Rabbi Natam said that, then you can ask that he seems to be contradicting himself. But if you just have like a Stam Tosfos says such a thing in a certain thing in one place and something that contradicts it in another place, it just means there were different Balei Tosfos who had different opinions. So here we have, right here in the three quarters of the way through the Masechta, where we have where the Balei Tosfos from here through the end switches. Anyway, so the Gemara says Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Hai umnus lo umnus hamelach. When we talk about this brother who went into Umnus, and we're talking about that now, that now we're talking about who his schar, the extra money that he's making for doing that, where that goes to the common pool to the Yerusha, that would be the Umnus Hamelech, that he was hired by the king, for example, to collect taxes. Meaning, in other words, if he was given the job purely on his own merits, then of course there's no particular reason he has to share that with his brothers. But here we're talking about that is the king only got it, only put him in this job because his father had it before. So therefore, in effect, it could have been any of the brothers who was chosen, and therefore all of them get to share in the profits of it equally. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Echad mina achan sheminohu gabai arpul mustus. If one of the brothers was appointed a tax collector or a pul mustus, Rashbam gives two explanations. One is that pul mustus means a policeman. Then he brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that it means a general. The word pulmustos is Greek for the word pulmus in Greek means war. Polemos, whatever is the Greek word for war. So pulmustos would be a general. So he was appointed as that. Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings a possibility that maybe the word he brings from earlier, Kisveyab, where the word was not Kulmustus with a pay, but rather Kulmustus with a kuf, which Kulmus means a pen. So in that case, he says maybe in the Rashbam, it shouldn't be Shoiter, a policeman, but rather Sofer, a scribe. Whatever the case, so the king appointed him to some kind of important job like that. If it was because he was one of the brothers, so in other words, again, the idea is that this kind of thing runs in a family, and that's the local minhag, that's the local minhag. So the Rashbam says we're not necessarily talking about here, we're talking about that he inherited the position from his father. Here we're talking about he wasn't appointed to it on his own, but it might be like there's a minhag in that city that each family for a certain amount of time has to provide one person who's going to do this job. So they have like a rotation, like a volunteer police force, but a semi-volunteer police force, let's say, where each year, each family has to provide somebody who's going to do this job for that period of time. So if that's the case, then he's doing it as the representative of his family. So then his pay and all of his earnings go to the brothers, because it's all a shutfus that all of them were involved in. Any of them would have been responsible for this, and he's doing it on behalf of all of them. Im machmas atzma, but if it was because of his own, if it's because his own talents, he himself is important and sharp and whatever, then la'atzma, then he keeps the sky for himself. So the Gemara asks, "Im machmas achen la'achen?" You're telling me that if it was because of his other brothers, because in other words he was just chosen as the representative of his family, so then he has to give it to them. Pshita, isn't that obvious? And the answer is, "Loitzricha dechorif tfei." Yes, but the chiddush is, even though it was something where they take somebody from each family, but nevertheless, it happens that he actually is the sharpest of all of them, the most capable of all of them. So you might say it's his capabilities that mainly earned him the job. Therefore, the Braisa is saying that no, if they didn't say we're taking him because he's extra capable, then it means they're just taking him because he's representing his family, and therefore they share in the schar equally. So one thing is, by the way, Rabbeinu Yohanan points out that this is, we're talking about the kinds of things that don't necessarily involve a lot of tircha, and you earn a lot of money from them. For example, collecting taxes is not necessarily putting in a lot of effort. You collect the earlier taxes and then you go and invest them, for example, and eventually you make more money from that, and eventually you go and collect the other taxes. So there's not a lot of effort involved. Therefore, we're saying that ordinarily the schar would go to his brothers. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Yohanan says, but if it's the kind of thing that involves a lot of tircha, then yeah, even though he was his family's representative, nevertheless he gets to keep it for himself because of all the tircha he put in. The Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Echad mina achin shenotam masayim zuz. Suppose that one of the brothers takes 200 zuz from the estate, lumad Torah, because he wants to use that to support himself while he's learning Torah, or lumad umnus, while he's learning, while he's training for a certain job. In other words, he's doing this, and it's going to benefit all of them. The Rashba says, here we're going to talk about that they can say that no, we shouldn't have to support you in doing that. So if he's doing it where he's going to be training for something where then he's going to be able to earn money for the whole family, then of course they have to support him in that. But here we're talking about where it's going to be something that's going to benefit him himself. He's going to become a Talmid Chacham. He's going to become whatever kind of professional. So now, Yecholin, so now the other brothers can tell him, im ata etzlenu, if you're going to stay with us, and we're going to all share in the proceeds from what you get, yesh lecha mezonis, then you're entitled to mezonis out of the estate, im ein ata etzlenu, but if you don't stay with us, if you're going to be all by yourself, ein lecha mezonis, then you don't get to be supported out of the estate. Then if you want, we'll divide up the estate, and then you can take 200 zuz and do whatever you want with it. So the Gemara asks, why can't they give him wherever he is? What's the difference whether he's living with them in the house or not? At least they should give him some mezonos, or maybe they should even give him full mezonos. After all, they haven't divided up the estate yet, so why should he forfeit mezonos just because he's not living with them, just because he went off to yeshiva or lahavdil to medical school or what have you? The answer is Messiah Rav Huna. The answer is that this point in the Gemara, this point in the Braisa, supports what Rav Huna says. The Amar Rav Huna, Birkas Habayis Beruba. The bracha of a house depends on the number of people in it. Meaning, in other words, So Rashbam says just it means that if he was living with them, the house would be more gebenched because of him. In other words, basically he has, every person has mazel, and his mazel would help the household. But Tosfos gives a few other explanations. First, he brings from Rabbeinu Hanano that, for example, you have certain expenses for a house where you have the same expense will work for one person or for many people. For example, candles for the house, illumination for the house. You're going to be paying the same amount for candles or electricity or whatever if you have one person in the house as if you have a whole bunch, because the same light will serve for everybody. So in other words, there's certain kinds of expenses. The more people you have sharing and using those expenses, the cheaper it comes out per person. Then Tosfos brings also, because the more people there are there, the greater the mazel is. Tosfos discusses that it may not necessarily be so simple to make it depend on mazel. The Rambam says you have, for example, very simple. You have, let's say, for similar to what Rabbeinu Hanan was saying about lighting, you have other kinds of things as well. You have, let's say, you buy food. You have one person buys food, a certain amount of it is going to end up going to waste because you buy, so the food comes in certain amounts. Whereas when you have more people, You can have, let's say, five people. You can have, let's say, you buy food, and five people would be able to eat from it just as much as four people, because realistically, if you only had four people eating it, then some of it would go to waste. So therefore, so the fifth one eats it, and there's no extra expense. So the point being, in other words, Rav Huna is saying, you have such things, so therefore they can say, if you're with us, then we're saving money when it comes to expenses, when it comes to household expenses. You want to live separately, then there's no reason we should be supporting you in the full style. So they want to ask for lace for the fifth birkas habayis. Fine. So at least they should give him something. Fine. They'll deduct the amount that because of birkas habayis, because they're losing out on that, but at least they should give him something. Umar says, Hachinami, you're right. We don't mean that they completely deny him any mizonis anymore from the estate. We just mean that they're entitled to say that we're not going to give you as much from the estate as you would have if you were living with us, now that you're away in yeshiva, or now that you're away in yeshiva or in medical school or what have you, then we're going to have to figure out how much we should give you, that given the fact that now we ourselves and now our expenses per person have gone up, whether because of mazel or whether because of shared expenses, etc., and therefore we're going to have to factor all that in. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Cholov and Israfin, Israfin Mishal Atzmai, Misrafin Mishal Atzmai, that if he became sick and he needs to be healed, then the cost, the medical bills come out of his own pocket. So the Gemara says, Shalach Rovin, Mishmeidir Abila, Loishano Elak Shecholov B'Pshia. That would apply only if he became sick because he was careless. So therefore, the other brothers can say, well, that was your carelessness, therefore we shouldn't have to pay for your medical bills. Aval, but if he became sick because of an onus, then in fact he is entitled to pay for it out of the estate, and all of them, in other words, share in that. Now Tosfos points out, we did learn a few blocks ago, we said younger children usually eat more food than the older ones, and the older ones usually spend more on clothing than the younger ones, and we said neither one can do that at the expense of the other one. But here we're talking about, because this is a one-time thing, they became sick. They were saying it's an ongoing thing, that they're gonna need more food, and then these ones are gonna need more food, and these ones are going to need more clothing. So therefore, that would be a reason to say that here it's a one-time thing that he's entitled to have them help in paying for it. Tosfos actually points out from the Tosefta that their taka is a difference in that regard. If it's a refuah yesh lakitzba, if there's a known amount that it's going to cost, then they should all share in it equally. But if it's she'en lakitzba, it's going to be like a long thing, like a chronic thing or something, then in fact it's part of mizonis, and then so then to begin with, he's entitled to collect mina emsa, the same way as he's entitled to collect for mizonis on an ongoing basis. He needs food, the same way over here where it's a chronic thing, then they all have to share with it. So that's Tosfos also points out over here, when we were talking about over here, as far as an onus, there's really no difference. Either way, we would pay mina emsa. So in other words, the distinction in the Tosefta between Yesh LaKitzva and Ein LaKitzva is talking about, in other words, the Bach teaches out in Tosfos that, and also the Maal Shor says similar, that what we mean is, when he was careless, then whether it's a one-time thing or an ongoing thing, then he has to pay for it out of his own pocket. But when it was an onus, then if it's a one time thing, he gets mina emsa, and if it's an ongoing thing, then he would have to pay for it. That seems to be the implication. So Maal Shor discusses in some detail over here. He says that he brings from the Tur that understands differently. With Onus, there's a difference. Yesh Lekitzva, Ein Lekitzva. When with that in Pshia, we would say that in all cases he has to pay for it for himself. But actually, then the Beis Yosef wonders that Tosfos seems to be saying the other way around. And we're saying, in other words, that the Mishnah And when the Mishnah is saying that that he has to pay for it on his own, and Rav Chanina is saying, Rav Ravin, in the name of Rav Ila, is making the distinction over here between Oinas and Pshia. So Maharsha explains, in other words, that the Tur might understand it as follows, that might understand Tosfos as follows, when the Mishnah says he has to pay for it for himself, so the Mishnah would be talking about whether it's Pshia or whether it's Onus. But in Pshia, always he's paying for himself, and with Onus there's a difference, that when it's Refor She'en La Kitzba, She'yesh La Kitzba, when it's a fixed thing, then he has to pay for it for himself. But if it's Refor She'en La Kitzba, if it's an ongoing thing, if it's a chronic thing, then they have to pay for it. So that would be a way of understanding the Tur, so that to reconcile it with Tosfos. Anyway, what do we mean? The Gemara says, "Hefi dami b'pshia." So what do we mean? Pshia? What would be an example of him being careless and becoming sick because of that? So the answer is kibdur Rav Chanina. Like the way Rav Chanina gives an example. D'amar Rav Chanina, hakol b'dei shemayim chutz mitzinim pachim. Everything is in Hashem's hands, meaning everything is in Hashem's hands chutz mitzinim pachim, with the exception of cold and heat. In other words, if a person becomes sick because of too much cold or too much heat. So actually the Rashbam gives two explanations. One is that sinim pachim, or sinim means cold, and pachim means like a trap that traps him and makes him sick. And the other explanation is sinim pachim means cold and heat. Whatever the case, the point is those kinds of things, a person is responsible to be careful for himself, and if he doesn't, if he becomes sick because he didn't wear the proper clothing in the proper season, for example, then that's his problem, that's Priya. All everything else that happens to a person is in Hashem's hands. Tosfos says, now what we mean is we have the expression "Hakol b'dei shemayim chutz miyiras shemayim." There we're talking about a person's behavior. There we're talking about a person's midos. Hashem determines in advance if a person is going to be strong or weak, or rich or poor, etc. But tzaddik v'rosha, like karma, Hashem doesn't determine whether the person is going to be a tzaddik or a rosha. He leaves that up to the person. But here we're talking about the events that happen to a person. So we're saying that other than cold and heat, everything else is that Hashem leaves that up to you. You're responsible to take care of yourself in the cold and the heat. Tosfos brings in this connection, a story where Antoninus one time needed to travel. He asks for Rebbe, he asks for Rebbe to daven for him. So Rebbe says, Hashem should help that you'll be saved from the cold. Antoninus says, what kind of a tefillah is that? Cold, all I have to do is put on an extra layer. So Rebbe says, fine, then Hashem should protect you from the heat. Antoninus says, oh, that's a good tefillah, because yeah, when it's too hot, then you don't really have a way of, preventing that. There is a story in that connection, I think I've told it in this shiur before, involving the famous Goyen, Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky. He was in Russia in the early times of the Soviet Union. He worked with the Friedrich Rebbe and other Rabbanim of that time to strengthen Yiddishkeit in the country. Eventually he was arrested and sent to Siberia. And it was in Siberia, as we all know, it's very cold over there, and they didn't provide the prisoners with decent clothing. Many people were dying of the cold. Rabbi Chezkel turns to the Eibishter and quotes the Gemara, and he says, you know when that applies, when a person has the ability to put on a warm coat, and he doesn't, and he catches cold, then that's his fault. But here he says, since I would want to put on warm clothing in this climate, but they're not giving it to me, then it has to be in your hands, Hashem, to protect me. And sure enough, during the years that he was in Siberia, he was there for 3 years, he never even caught a cold, even when many other people passed away from the cold over there. Anyway, so Rav Chanina says, Shenema, we have a pasuk, Sinim Pachim B'derech Ikesh, cold and Pachim, where again, Pachim can mean traps or it can mean heat, are in the way of a crooked person. Shemer Nafshe Yirchak Mehem, a person who guards his life will stay away from them. So therefore, in other words, so the pasuk is saying that these kinds of things are up to a person to guard himself from. He can't catch cold or catch some other thing like that and blame Hashem for it, because he should have taken precautions. All right, Mishnah says, Ha'achin, here's another thing that involves something that the brothers share, that where we say when the brothers share something or when they don't. So you have, in those times, they had something called Shushvinus. They had it was like this. A wedding, after all, is a very expensive thing. So it's a very expensive thing to hold. So they would have a system over there. One person would give what a shushman means, a good friend. So a good friend would give something as a present toward that would help towards the other person's wedding expenses, and then he'd join in and participate in the simcha, and then later on the other guy would reciprocate when, so for example, Reuven gives such a present to Shimon when Shimon is getting married, and now later on when Reuven gets married, then Shimon reciprocates and he sends Reuven a gift to help with his wedding expenses and joins in the simcha. So that kind of system was called Shushvinus. In a vague way, you have like that also nowadays. For example, you know, somebody sends you an invitation to their wedding and you send them a check or whatever you do nowadays for some money, or you buy something from their wedding registry or whatever. But you don't have the whole system that the Gemara is, we're going to learn about it more in the Gemara tomorrow. That's the Shem, that there was, it's a whole thing where it can actually be demanded and based in and collected. I guess we don't really have that anymore. Anyway. So the Mishnah describes, Ha'achen she'osim b'ktsasim shushvinus b'chayehav. If some of the brothers participated in shushvinus while their father was alive. So in other words, the father sent one or more of his children to attend the wedding and bring a present with them. So they're doing it on behalf of the family. So then, chozer shushvinus, when that shushvinus is going to be paid back, When the brothers are getting married, chozer la'emsa, then it goes back to the common pool, meaning that all of the brothers get to share in it. We're going to actually see in the Gemara a number of ways of explaining what the Mishnah means, chozer la'emsa. But this is one way. The point is, shushvinus nigbus bebeisin, because shushvinus is considered such a solid obligation that it can be collected and based in. It's considered like a loan, sort of. The Rambam stresses, it's basically, you have to consider it, it is like a loan, although we're going to see in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that it has a number of dinim that make it different than a regular loan. But one point is that it is actually, it's meant to be a loan, where unlike a regular loan, where you have a certain time, you have to pay me back within the next month, within the next year, whatever it is, but here we have, it's kind of open-ended. When you eventually get married, then the loan has to be paid back. So the Mishnah continues, Aval shaleach l'chaveret kadeh yayin v'kadeh shemen, but if he sends to somebody jars, barrels of wine or barrels of oil, now the Rashbam gives two possibilities. Either there's no chuppah involved and he's just giving him a present, or it is for his chuppah, it is for his wedding, but he's not going to join in the simcha, so then it's not considered shushvinus, then it's just a regular present, a nigman bebeistin, then it doesn't get collected in beistin, because then it's just stam gmilus chasadim, then it's just stam a present, and obviously there's no reciprocation that's expected and can be demanded and based in. The Torah Chaim actually asks on these two explanations of the Rashbam, if you're saying there's no wedding involved and there's stam giving him a gift, then of course there's nothing that can be collected and based in. And on the second one, if you're talking about that he's sending it to him for his wedding, but he's not attending the wedding, the Mishnah should have mentioned that point. It should have said he sends, when we ought to say, Kadi Yain Makadi Shemin, it should say he's sending Shushvinus, but he doesn't participate in the wedding. So Achronim talk about the Pnei Shloimeh explains as far as the first question, that the you have an explanation from Rabbeinu Yonah and from the David, that what happens is we're not talking about an actual wedding, but we're talking about a feast, a psuda, that he's making sudas mireus, it's called a suda for all of his good friends. So therefore, so you would think that maybe also for a sudas mireus, it's not specifically for a wedding, but it is like a party to which he's inviting all his friends. You would think there was some reciprocation intended. So therefore, the Mishnah says that no, there's not. It's considered gemilas chasadim. And then as far as the second question, when it says hashilayach, it implies that he's only sending and he's not there personally. So therefore, so the Mishnah can't say sending shushvinus, because the whole point of shushvinus is you go in person. Therefore, the Mishnah would have to use the expression that shileach, he sends it, meaning that he himself is not coming. In any case, So the Gemara says a Rimini. So now, so we said in the Mishnah that the shushvinus, again, we said when some of the brothers go on behalf of their father, bringing the shushvinus with them, then we said that later on, when it gets paid back to all of them. So Rimini, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction, because the Braisa says, if the father sends through one of his sons a shushvinus to a friend of his, Then when that Shushvinus is paid back, then it goes specifically to him, to that one son, not to the other sons, where the Mishnah had said it goes to all of them. But if the Shushvinus was sent, if the Shushvinus gift was sent to the father when he married off one of his sons, then when the father pays back to that person, when now that person is now getting married, chazeres mina emsa, then it comes from the common pool, meaning that all the brothers participate in that shushvinus, because it's considered like their father lent them, it's considered like their father borrowed that money, and the yesemim have to pay back their father's debt. So we see, in other words, that it's not always, it's not always that the Shushvinus goes la emsa, like the Mishnah had said. You know what? You're right. In our Mishnah, when it talks about chazra la emsa, it means when it was sent to the father. So the second case of the Braisa. It's true. In the first case, where the father sends it with one of his sons, then, where the point is, where the son himself is going to be the one participating in the wedding, then you're right, when the Shushvinus is paid back later on, when that son gets married, then it goes exclusively to him. Okay, so that's one answer. But the Gemara says, still, how could you say that? The Mishnah had said, where some of the brothers do Shushvinus, that implies that we're not talking about the father receiving Shushvinus for one of his sons getting married. We're talking about that the brothers sent a Shushvinus. So how does that work with Rav Asi's explanation? The Gemara says Tony Linux Sasan. Fine, you have to change the wording of the Mishnah a little bit. Not that the brothers did Shushvinus, but rather that Shushvinus was done to some of them. Limik Sasan, to some of them. The Gemara says, well, Shachozra Shushvinus Katani, but the Mishnah says that the Shushvinus will be returned back. So that means that they sent it, and now they're receiving back later. The answer is Hachakama Chosra Ligbos. The answer is what it means is when it comes time for it to return, to be collected, meaning when it's time for them to return the Shushvinus for what was given to their father, Nigbos Ve'emsa, then it gets collected from the common pool. So therefore, it can still work with Rav Asi's explanation by reinterpreting the Mishnah, not that we're talking about we thought that the father sent the Shushvinus as one of his sons. Now we're saying, no, the other way around. The father had received Shushvinus on behalf of one of his sons, and now we're saying that when it's time to repay the Shushvinus, when it's time for that friend to get married and the Shushvinus is going to be paid back, then it comes mina emsa, it comes from the common pool, because to begin with, it was sent to the father on behalf of all of them. Okay, so that's one answer. Rav Asi Omar, Rav Asi says a different answer. We don't have to reinterpret the Mishnah. Loi Kasha can be stam, can be mefarish, because there's a difference whether the father, where the Mishnah is talking about where the father sent the Shushvinus, but it depends whether in the Mishnah is talking about stam. He sent it with one of his sons. He's not saying it specifically on behalf of this son. Therefore, it's on behalf of the whole family, and therefore, when the Shushvinus is repaid, then it goes to the whole family. Whereas the Braisa is saying specifically that he's sending it with that son, saying this, it's Shushvinus on behalf of this son. So now it goes back to that son when it's time for him to get married. Kitatanya, as in fact we learn in the Braisa, Sholach loy ovav Shushvinus, when his father sent Shushvinus to him, chi chederes loy. When the Shushvinus returns, when that son gets married, then it returns specifically to him because the father had sent the Shushvinus specifically for him. Sholach ovav Shushvinus sam, but if the father sends Shushvinus without specifying, chi chederes for emsa, then when it's returned, it returns to the common pool and all of them divide it. Okay, so that's two explanations so far. One Rav Asi in the name of Rav Yechanan, the other one Rav Asi himself. And a third one, Shmuel Amar Chacha B'Yav Maskinen. Shmuel says a third possibility. The Mishnah is talking about over here that there's Yibum involved. The father had the Braisa had talked about where the father sent Shushvinus through one of his sons, and we said it goes back to that son. Our Mishnah had said it goes La'emza, because Chacha B'Yav Maskinen, because the Mishnah is talking about a case of Yibum. The son who was the Shliach died, and now his brother is doing Yibum and marrying his wife. Now the Yavam also inherits what his dead brother would have had. Therefore, he also inherits the Shushvinus. The problem is she'ena noto b'roi kava muchzak. The problem is that a Yavam, just like we learned in the previous parak about a Bechor, that a Bechor does not get from Roi, from property that would later on come to the father. Only he gets from Muchzak. He gets a double portion only of what the father currently has in his possession when he dies. In the same way over here, the Yavam doesn't get from Roy, only from Muchzak. And right now it's only Roy, because this son who died, Reuven, let's call him, had previously given Shushvinus, which in effect, therefore, he had lent out money and eventually it's going to be paid back. But it's only Roy. It's not, he doesn't have it in his possession now. So now when he dies and Shimon is Miyabim, his wife, then he's not collecting from that. So therefore the Yavam doesn't get the Shushvinus exclusively. It gets divided la'emsa among all the brothers. So that would be the case where the Mishnah is talking about, where the Bryce says talking about where there's no Yibum involved. It's just a regular case of Shushvinus. Well, the Gemara says Miklal. Well, then we can infer from what Shmuel is saying, the idach Mishalim, that the other person does have to pay back the Shushvinus, but he's paying back that he has to pay it back. And the question is just to which one? The question is why? Lema tnuli Shushvini ve'esmachimad. Why can't he say, you know what? I would be perfectly willing to give the Shushvinus, but the one who previously gave me the gift is dead. So you give him to me, and I'll rejoice with him. In other words, the point is, what did we say? Reuven sent Shushvinus to Yankel, where the idea is eventually when Yankel is going to have to pay it back when Reuven is going to get married. So now Reuven's dead. So let him say then in that case. So why do I have to pay? Reuven, my shushvin, my good friend, is dead. If he was alive, then he would join in my chasana, and then I would give the shushvinus. So now he's not available anymore, so therefore I shouldn't have to pay off the shushvinus. So why is he paying to a yurish anyway? Mi loy tanya, don't we learn a similar kind of thing by kiddushin? Mokum shenagu lahachse kiddushin, in a place where they have the minhag that the chosin, the kala returns the money of kiddushin, so she received the pruta or whatever from her chosin for kiddushin. So in a place where the minhag is to return it machzirin, then it has to be returned back. Mokum shenagu shloy lahachse in machzirin, in a place where they have the minhag not to return it, then they don't return it. When do we say that in that case we have to return the money of kiddushin in a place where that's the minhag is only where the kala died? But if the chosin died and ein machzirin, then they don't have to return it even if it's a place where the minhag is to. My timer, why? Yecholah he should timer, because she can say, why should I have to return it? Tnuli baili ve'esmachimai. Give me my husband, and I would rejoice with him. In other words, I'm perfectly willing to fulfill my end of the kiddushin and go through with nisuin. It's not my fault that. So what we're talking about over here to return? Sorry, we're talking about over here where, let's say, so they did the kiddushin, and then they weren't able to. In the end, they weren't able to do the nisuin because the kala died. So we're saying, so again, if the kala died, then in a place where the minhag is, therefore to return the kiddushin, look, the chosin gave money to the kala for kiddushin. In the end, she died. They weren't able to go through with the wedding. So there are some places where they have the minhag that then the money would be returned. But if it's the other way around, the point is, Rav Yosef Abba is saying, ultimately in the name of Shmuel, in the name of Ma'ukva, that if the chosin dies, then she can say, no, I would have been perfectly willing to go through with the wedding. Not my fault that he died. So therefore I shouldn't have to return the kiddushin money. Hochanami Neima, why don't we say the same thing over here? Tnuli shushvini ve'esnachimo. If you give me my shushvin, then I'll rejoice with him. In other words, I would be perfectly willing to keep my end of the shushvinos, to join in Reuven's wedding and be mesameach with him, and then I'll give him the money or the present or whatever of shushvinos. Now that he's dead, I shouldn't have to pay anything. So what are we talking about paying in the first place? Where we should be talking about whether it's going to the original brother or to his yoshim or whatever. So Rabbi Yosef says, fine, we're talking about where they did join together for the Sheva, they did celebrate together for the Sheva Brachas, and now therefore he's obligated to pay this Yankel is obligated to pay the Shushvinus because he did join in the Simcha for the wedding and for the Sheva Brachas. But the Hispik reported out Jemes, he didn't have a chance to pay him back before the Chosin died, so now he can't say Tnulu Shushvini, the Esmachimai, because he was Mesameach with him, therefore now he owes the Shushvinus. But it is true, if Reuven had died before any of that had happened, before Yankel, this friend, had a chance to join in the Simcha, then it's true we wouldn't obligate him to pay because he could say Tnulu Shushvini, the Esmachimai. And we're going to continue in the Gemara tomorrow about Hashem, and we're going to analyze this detail about paying back Shushvinus and about this whole thing of returning the Kiddushin money. And then we're going to talk about more generally about various dinim involving Shushvinus.